40, said Victor Hugo, is the old age of youth. 50, the youth of old age. Well, I gotta tell you, no matter how old I am, I'm feeling quite young. I'm Rav Mike Foyer, and this is the Jewish Heroism Project. A special birthday thought on the power of counsel. So if you don't know, let me be the first to tell you that life has stages. And you may have noticed, if you've been a longtime listener, that I've entered a new stage of my creative process. The Jewish story has come to a close, and the Jewish Heroism Project is getting off the ground. Now, I want to say that not everybody has been universally pleased with this transition. So send me your thoughts. As long as they're constructive, they can be critical. I want to know where you'd like to see this go, because there's a boiling mass of ideas in my mind, and they haven't quite gelled, if you sense. But nonetheless, there's a powerful new phase coming, one that is more focused on change than simply telling a story which will affect you. And since life has stages, and since, if you haven't guessed already, I'm just about to turn 50 years old, I wanted to give a little personal reflection on the power of counsel, because there's a Mishnah that tells us that when you turn 50, that's the age of Eitzah, of counsel. But I want to actually take a quick glance at the Mishnah, do a little bit of life retrospective, if you will. After all, it's my mic. So the Mishnah there, which is in the fifth chapter of Pirkei Avot, the Ethics of Our Fathers, if you want to look it up, says, Hu Haya Omer used to say, Ben Chamesh Shanim the Mikra, when you're 5, you should be learning the written Torah. When you're 10, you should be learning the Mishnah. When you're 13, you become bound to mitzvot. Well, you know, the truth of the matter is, my Jewish education for a guy who grew up outside the religious community in America was pretty good. But I wouldn't say that I'd mastered the Mikra and the Mishnah by age 10. I did, however, have a very important entry into the obligation and the binding sense of the covenant. And this is a very important piece. At some point or another in your life, if you want to thrive and grow as a Jew, there needs to be an entry into a binding covenant, whether it happens at 13, 30, or 83. So going on, Ben Chamesh Esrei LeTalmud, you're 15 years old, you're learning Gemara. It's a big mistake, frankly, in most of our schools today, but we'll leave it to the side. 18 to Chuppah. Well, I was more like 27 when I got married, but all in good time. I want to bless all the people out there. It's my birthday, after all, who are looking for their match, that you find them. And for all the people who are married, that you should find real joy in your marriage, and that you should do the work to know each other and love each other. More on that to come. Moving forward. Ben Esrim Lirdof, 20 years old to pursue, and Lord knows that pursuit has not ceased. But, you know, I do recall waking up and realizing I needed to get a job. Ben Shloshim the Koach, 30 years old, you got to be strong. And finally, what I'm really interested in is Ben Arbaim Labina. When you get to be 40, then you finally understand. Now, you may be thinking, I said I turned 50. Why are we talking about 40? Well, because between 40 and 50 is a whole decade of understanding. And before I have anything to say about what the way looks like going forward from 50 onwards, I want to take a moment to pull the lessons from the previous decade for myself and hopefully for your own edification. So the Mishnah says when you turn 14, that's the age of understanding. And one of the classic commentators there, the Bartanur, if you want to see inside, says, why is it 40 to understanding, to Bina? Because after 40 years in the desert, Moshe turns to the people of Israel there at the 29th chapter of Devarim and says, V'lo natan Hashem lachem lev ladat ve'einaim lirot ve'oznaim lishmo ad hayom hazen. Lord hasn't given you a heart to know, eyes to see, or ears to hear until this very day. Meaning after 40 years of wandering in the desert, you finally get it. And what the Bartanur is telling us is that there's a certain point at which you may have seen these things. You may have heard them. You may even have had let them touch your heart. But until you're 40, they're not going to go in. So I want to take a look at these three and try to understand the understanding that we're meant to be taking forward in life in general, and certainly at least from the age of 40. Lev ladat, a heart to know. And the one thing I know about the heart is that love is precious and it needs to be cultivated. Young love, if I can use that phrase, happens. Love in maturity is cultivated. It's watered and cared for. It's given the time and attention, not only that it needs, but it deeply deserves. And in this sense, I've never found a more important piece of Eitzah, of advice, counsel, than Eric Fromm's classic definition of the four stages of love. Care, responsibility, respect, and knowledge. If you care, then you engage. If you don't, then we have no discussion. Responsibility means that what you care for is important enough to do that you're willing to step up in times of need and day to day. But there's a problem with responsibility. We all have a responsibility for our objects. I have responsibility for my children, for my wife, for my friends, and also for my car and the books on the shelf. What's the difference between object and subject, between the things I have responsibility for and the ones I enter into a loving relationship with? Well, that's the next stage. Respect. Because I don't see my books or my car as an independent subject that have an existence beyond my own needs. Whereas my wife, children, and friends absolutely are. Real love begins with this difficult transition between taking responsibility for the people we care for and learning to respect their independent existence. They're not just the ones that we love. They are their own people. And sometimes love means helping them do things which have nothing to do with me or who they are in my life, right? True respect means seeing other as other and having that deepen our love and not cause a sense of alienation. And if you do that, then you can get to the fourth stage, says Frum, knowledge. Because see, the problem is if I don't learn to respect the people I love, I keep them as objects for which I'm responsible, care for them very well even, then I'll never actually know who they are. In fact, it's a disincentive to know who they are because sometimes they're going to pop up and want to do things that don't fit my image of what caring for them would look like. Care, responsibility, respect, and knowledge. That's where real intimacy comes from. And by the way, this is a daily practice, if not moment by moment. Love isn't something you have. Love isn't even something that you feel. Love is something that you do. Live la da. You have a heart that knows how to know by taking care, feeling a sense of responsibility, taking a posture of respect, and then coming to know. That's number one. Number two, he says, well, einaim lirot. What does it mean to understand? Now you have eyes to see. Well, what else are eyes for, are you thinking? Well, you know, seeing is an act of taking responsibility. We really only see that which we're willing to let into our world. The other way to say this is that we all have filters. And sometimes that's a good thing. I mean, if you're walking down the street and the pain of every person you see draws your absolute attention, it's crippling. You can't function in the world. At the same time, those filters blind us. That's what a filter does. You can't live without filters, but you have to first learn to see yours. See what is passing the world from reality into your experience and understand how that limits your vision and what it's serving. Sometimes it's a necessity. Other times, let's say, less positive aspects of self. And I want to tell you this, don't despair. If you let yourself see, but you feel a lack of agency in what you can do, how you can actually take responsibility, you can always pray. There's nothing more powerful than holding up the images in the world, good, bad, or otherwise, to God and saying, I know that the world could be better than this. So, Lev Ladat, Einaim Lirot, I've gained a heart to know and eyes to see, last but certainly not least, Oznaim Lishma, ears to hear. Now, ears to hear, again, sounds quite obvious, but I'm just going to tell you this, use them. Listen as much as you speak. As a person who loves the sound of his own voice, and in fact, is a little bit infatuated by words, one thing I've learned that the older I get is that less is indeed more. Silence is often a much more powerful tool than speech. Now, you may find that strange. That's because if you're listening here, you probably only know me through the sound of my voice. I'm telling you now that the power of your ears outweighs that of your mouth at least half the time, if not 9 times out of 10. One of the most important things you can cultivate is what my Rebbe, Rav Daniel Cohen, used to call sichat hidhud. The ability, it means literally a echoing conversation. Meaning, don't just listen. Allow the things that you hear to resonate within you so that if you should say them back to those who spoke them in the first place, they feel a sense of connection and not simply a repetition. Let the things you hear affect you. Because, of course, Oznaim Lishmoa doesn't mean just to hear. It means to understand. So these are some of the things I'm trying to take forward from the previous decade. Now let's talk about the big 5-0. Because it says, Ben Chamishim Le'etza. If you're supposed to understand by the time you get at least from 40 to 50, now I'm supposed to know how to give counsel. Now, what counsel would I give myself going forward based on what I now understand? I mean, by the way, if you don't know, I do quite a bit of counseling. And if you're interested in learning anything about how to gain a heart that knows, eyes that see and manage the experience that that provides, and ears which not only hear but listen and understand, I'm happy to sit with you or you and your partner. I do couples counseling as well to try to give you a bit of the wisdom and understanding I've gained in the last 50 years. But for now, I want to give myself some etza, some counsel. And you know, another classic commentator on that Mishnah, the Yachin, if you want to look it up yourselves, says, well, what does it mean, ben chamishim le'etza? What happens at 50 that suddenly you're able to give counsel? He says, well, you know, b'kol etza yesh tei drachim. He says, when it comes to counsel and questions of advice, there's always two paths before you. And someone who's 50, he says, kvar yuchal lishkol hamufchar. Right? Anyone who has enough life experience at age 50 is able to weigh out the choice of these two paths. Now, I'm not so sure I agree with the binary there, that every option is this or that, but I certainly wholeheartedly agree that decision-making is an extraordinary, difficult challenge and one of the essential skills in life which we must have, but somehow we never teach. And on one hand, I gotta say, decision-making gets harder as you get older, because you won't really understand the consequences of a decision until you're living it a couple decades down the line. And that's why when you face real decisions at this stage, you appreciate the gravity of the choice you're being asked to make. That's why so many people feel a sense of midlife crisis right about this very time, because they're looking back and they see the path they chose and they say, how on earth could that Schmendrick at age 30 have done what they're doing and I have to live that life? Now, I want to say with absolute wholeness of truth and joy, I don't feel any sense of crisis. Oh, there's frustration. There's things yet to be done, and certainly decisions that perhaps would have been more wisely made. But thank God for the life I live, the family I have, the place that I find myself both in time, space, history, and spirit, right? But there's a recognition when it comes to the idea that 50 is the age of counsel, that it's only now that we really know how to choose and understand what it means to do so. So even if it's difficult, we know what it means. And so how do we do it? Right now, I actually have a tool which has been given to me by the shadow consultant of this program. I don't know if you know, there's somebody out there who prefers to remain nameless, who is a tremendous source of inspiration and insight and love and friendship in my life, right? And he gave me a wonderful book by a man named Anley Stanley. It's called Better Decisions, Fewer Regrets. You may not like the packaging, but I got to tell you, at the core, the five questions that we use in order to make a decision are so worthwhile that I'm going to go through them now. We'll just take this to a close. It's going to be a quick thought. Okay, if I'm going to give myself advice and learn to give counsel rightly to others, these are the questions that we need to ask. First of all, there's what we call the integrity question. Whatever it is you're facing on the road ahead, Mike, in the next 10 years, are you being honest with yourself? Because never forget that the mind has no more powerful ability than to fool itself. And so, if I'm going to make a decision, enter into a relationship, or basically do just about anything, I have to ask, am I being honest? Now, you might say, well, if the mind has this tremendous ability to fool itself, then how am I supposed to answer that question? Really, the answer is that by this age, you must have people you trust. And you will know if you are able to be an honest person if you're surrounded by those who will be honest with you. Look around at the people in your life, because it's never too late to grow and form new relationships. I hope that those people can help you answer the question, am I being honest with myself, whatever the particular issue may be at hand. Number one, the integrity question. Number two, drumroll please, conscience question. It's similar, but not quite the same. This is a more internal one, right? Is there a tension that deserves my attention? Sometimes we feel anxious. Sometimes we feel torn. Sometimes there's a knot in the stomach or the mind that I can't really identify. And here, rather than asking if I'm being honest, I need to come to awareness of what's bothering me. Not a simple process. And you have to take the time. Here's another piece of advice I'll give myself. Mike, take the time to pay attention to your own heart and mind. Get out in the woods. take a walk around the block, whatever you need to do, and give that tension attention until it either dissolves, because sometimes anxiety is really just an end unto itself, or resolves itself into focus and you realize what's really bothering you. At this point, the things that bother you deserve attention. So there's the integrity question, am I being honest? There is the conscience question, is there something that deserves my attention that I am ignoring? Third, maturity question, one I've never been quite so good at, which is, what's the wise thing to do? Not, is this a good idea or is this the right move? What's the wise thing to do? In light of all my past experience in the world that I'm living in right now, plus my vision of self, future hopes and dreams, is this the right thing to do right now? Am I willing to say no, but not no, not yet, or yes? Again, the advice I would give myself going forward at 50, if it's not a hell yes, then it's a no. And that sounds great. It's much harder to do than many of us realize. Okay, integrity, conscience, maturity. Next thing, relationships. What does love require of me? Now, this means that I center something other than myself in the question. If I say, what does love require of me? It stands opposite the question. Well, what is it that I'm entitled to? What is it that I want? This is about doing what's best for others in my life, in spite of anything that may come back to me. Love often requires sacrifice, but the word sacrifice doesn't quite touch it. A korban in Hebrew isn't just a sacrifice. It's more of an offering, because the karev is to bring something close. And so therefore, what does love require of me going forward? It requires that I be more available to the people around me. It requires that I elevate the needs of those that I love right up there next to my own, something which perhaps one should do at all times, but I'm telling you, the older you get, the more important it becomes. Last, but certainly not least, my personal favorite question, the one which I've really built my life around, which is the legacy question. Meaning, whenever I'm facing whatever decision is, whatever life moment, it will one day just be a story that I tell. And the question becomes, what story do I want it to be? Now, I believe that we're all telling a story every day in which we could be the hero. Now, we're not necessarily so. Some of us retreat into victimhood, find a sense of safety by giving up our agency and feel comfort in blaming the world for what happens to us. Other of us choose at times the role of a villain, wanting to punish the world and those around us for the things which have been done to us, maintaining a sense of agency by trying to offload our pain on others. But the hero's stance is to look the world in the face and say, yes, this is indeed happening to me, but I have the agency to become the person I need to be through whatever it is that I face, right? A hero doesn't flinch in the face of reality. And if there's any advice I can give myself, and if you happen to be listening, to you as well, dear listener, then everyone can be the hero of their own life journey. And this is the invitation I want to make to you. Join me on this hero's journey. I'm digging deep into Torah to uncover the heroic face, to try to hear the mythic voice, to access the qualities and characteristics, the stories and heroic models that can help each of us not just appreciate the depth of the story that we've inherited, but to become actors, agents, subjects, not objects, to become really the heroes of our own life journey. And in so doing, to step a little bit more toward the center of Jewish history and the center of creation itself, to make a world which is truly reflective of the will of its maker, good in its wholeness, united in its purpose, and brilliant in the face that we see. So happy birthday to me. I want to bless you all with health, wealth. We should see a world of justice, which is a foundation for real shalom, not the thin peace that we're all seeking now. And we should merit to see the face of the divine in every encounter. Happy birthday to me. Happy birthday to me. I just want to sign off by thanking people. You know, there's folks out there that have been tuned in for years. I appreciate the fact that you care enough to give your ears to hear, your heart to know, and perhaps your eyes to see what it is we're trying to do in the world. And I want to invite folks to share this out there. You want to give me a birthday wish? Share this show with someone you think could benefit from a little bit of Aitza of Council. I also want to thank the folks that give their money to help make these things happen. You can go to jewishheroism.com, and in addition to the fantastic videos, supplementary videos there that you can only find on the website, and the source sheets that will help you deepen your own learning, you'll see in the upper right-hand corner a button that says Donate. You can give now American tax-free one-time donations just by clicking that link. And make sure you find the Jewish Heroism Project in the pull-down menu. What else would I want to say? I want to say that the world is a beautiful place, and I love you all, and that we should be joyous together.